हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 101. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. Bana was the oldest of 100 sons of the great devotee Bali. This implies that Bana was not a devotee. The unavoidable result of bad association with a sinful person who hated the Lord and committed offenses. The offense could not be destroyed even by worshipping Shiva, the great devotee of the Lord, endowed with the wealth of the earth. Rather, through Shiva's association, he tried to compete with the Lord. With his 1,000 arms, he was able to play the instruments very skillfully. The name Mrida means compassionate and happy. Because Shiva was compassionate, he danced. His dancing was filled with devotion for the Supreme Lord. So then, he's happy because he helped him in his service to the Lord. But the point is Bana is not interested in anything spiritual. So that he's only taking material benefit. So we see is that by bad association, even though his father was a great devotee, by bad association, then it didn't work out so good. Right? Just like we see in Bulmasura, the same thing. By bad association, then it didn't work out so nice. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, "The Lord and Master of all created beings, the compassionate refuge of his devotees, gladdened Banasura by offering him the benediction of his choice. Bana chose to have him, Lord Shiva, as the guardian of his city." Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. You know, his father had Vamanadeva as the guardian, and so now he's got Lord Shiva as the guardian, right? So, yeah. So having a deity as the guardian of his city, then that's kind of a family thing. Right? So. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. Why does Shiva accept such a sinful person? It is said Shiva, by his nature, is endowed with compassion as well as wealth and power. The faults of the sinful person sometimes are destroyed by a relationship with him. When Shiva is absorbed in the Lord while dancing, his mercy arose because of Bana's music. That is explained in this verse. He asked Bana to choose a gift, Varena Chandayam Asa. He chose to have Shiva as the protector of his city. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Banasura was intoxicated with his strength. One day when Lord Shiva was standing beside him, Banasura touched the Lord's lotus feet with his helmet, which shone like the sun, and spoke to him as follows. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. A particular event is described. Shiva was by his side because he continually stayed with Bana in his city as its protector. Harivamsa describes his thoughts with his minister. Shiva, the master of the world, the creator of all the devatas and demons and Kartikeya, is living in our city. He was intoxicated with his strength. Shiva thought of giving him a benediction suitable to his evil nature when he was about to ask for a favor. By the mercy of Shiva, he obtained great wealth, such as his gold crown. He was intoxicated with that wealth. Bana touched Shiva's feet with devotion. That devotion was filled with Rajas and Tamas, right? So that it's devotion. In other words, you have to use devotion for anything to work. But the point is that devotion, because its motive is not to please the Lord, it's not actually counted as devotion. We just say it's karma or it's jnana. But in actuality, it's devotion. But it's just the tools of devotion, the attitude of devotion, all these are used for a material purpose. Right, so before we were saying is that you have the activities that are being used in the Lord's service. And so then then there's the attitude of devotion in which that's offered. So only if it's offered and dealt with in devotion, then will you get a result. That's just how karma and gyan works, because bhakti is the only thing that's functioning. So it's the only mechanical, you could say, operation of the cosmos is bhakti. But if you want to see it without bhakti, then it's called karma and gyan. Right? So those activities, then they have the knowledge and skills that's there, just like the devotional activities have knowledge and skills. But it's the attitude that makes it correct. Right? So that attitude is that of devotion. So by devotion, then the knowledge and skills work, and the proper result is obtained. Right? So means why do you do an activity nicely? Right? Because of the devotion. You use the knowledge properly because of, say, that devotion. So being devoted to the goal that you want, therefore you act in such a way that what you're doing matches with the improvement in the quality or the improvement in the transformation of what you're working with. So now, if we're applying it to karma, you're using the same mechanics. They function in the same way. So you have to have the right knowledge and skill and the right attitude. Then they'll transform, because it's Krishna's energy. You can't transform it just any way you like. Right? Mm-hmm. And so then, doing that, then it will work out. But the problem is what's the level of consciousness with which it's done, being done? Right? Because we'll say, oh, but if I have the right attitude, then that's enough. You have the right attitude and the right consciousness. So we're just seeing a little bit more fine detail here. So, because the consciousness is about himself, therefore it's mode of passion and ignorance. It's not actually proper devotion. But the form is devotion. Right? No, we'll say it. He's devoted to his work, or he's devoted to his country, or he's devoted to the cause, or whatever it is. So, because of that, that's why it's working, and that's why it's being recognized. But once you get the result, that the devotion to that object no longer remains. So it's not actually devotion. Because the goal was something else. So you're using the devotion for a particular purpose. Does that make sense? Yes.
Srila Rupa Goswami, he defines devotional service. That's quite clear. But material devotion, how can we define it? What is it?
He defines pure devotion.
You could probably say being fully conscious of yourself, doing activities favorable for yourself, in completely performed with the benefit you'll get either in karma or gyan.
Maharaj, within his definition, two of the qualities given are primary and two are secondary. So if the primary ones are taken out and just the secondary ones are focused on.
Just the karma and gyan. Well, no, but it's still favorable for ourselves. So it's because you could say that devotion means it's a commitment to, you're trying to get a result in the area of commitment. But the point is why are you doing that? So the bhakti means that you're doing it to get the result to please Krishna.
Right.
But we're doing things, even if it's for someone else, to get the result because pleasing that other person pleases ourselves. You know, and that benefit we'll get. So that's the point of bhakti. It doesn't have that element of trying to please ourselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, especially the bhakti is given by Lord Chaitanya. That pure unalloyed devotion. So even the aspects of liberation, which are spiritual, but they're still connected with our spiritual situation. But because it's spiritual, then it's not material. But so that's pure devotion. But pure unalloyed devotion means that it doesn't even have the desires for liberation or any benefits to be gained ourselves from the devotion performed. So then it's just that commitment to getting a particular result for, a particular, individual or purpose like that. So that's why then the Shastras say without devotion, without bhakti, then none of it will work. The point is though, for the materialist, that bhakti is temporary. It's just like rasas, it's just one, rasas one entity. Now you can use it, apply it, rasa to relationship with the Lord, or that emotional relationship with the others, or the relationship with the senses. But rasa is the same, how it works, ashray, vishray, and everything, the mechanics, udipans, and all, it's the same. Does that make sense? That's why we can give an example within, swargiya rasa, in connection with Vaikuntha rasa. We can give an example from this world, like say the mother and child and the devotion, and to give an example of the spiritual world, because rasa is the same. It's just what kind of rasa will be tasted. So in the same way as bhakti is the same, it's just what kind of bhakti will be tasted. Will it be Vaikuntha bhakti, will it be Partiva bhakti, or will it be Swargiya bhakti? Does that make any sense? Or?
Yeah. So in terms of rasa, can we say that the sthayi bhava is primary, and then the other bhavas are secondary in terms of, not that they are secondary, but
yes,
the action happens in there.
Yes,
the sthayi bhava, it's...
No, you can define it that way, but in this, you're just saying, in this way, you're taking the primary as the central point,
right,
and the secondary is the forms that's used. So in other words, the primary is the connection or relationship with Krishna. The secondary is the forms used.
Yes.
So then the sthayi bhava, therefore, then is there. But how do you appreciate it? Through the secondary.
Yes.
The forms of Krishna, the activities of Krishna, things related with Krishna. And then they give results within the mind, within the body, within the emotions. And then there, you apply further devotion with that. So yes, you can say it's like Mother Jashoda, the primary is their attraction or that rati of serving Krishna as a parent. The secondary will be cooking for Krishna, bathing Krishna, making ornaments for Krishna, those kind of things. Right? So when that becomes reflected here, we see it becomes reversed. So the forms that are used are more important than the attitude. People aren't satisfied when the attitude's not right, but they can't put their finger on it. They think, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. Yeah. Or even if you're trying to explain that, you'll explain it through the secondary. You never do anything for me. What do you mean? You do so much. It's like, but it means that there's a specific mood or something, or you're doing it, but it doesn't have the mood, so therefore it's not technically about them, it's just about doing the duty, or, you understand? So there's an awareity of that there's something more than the secondary, but it's always expressed through the secondary, because that's just how rasa is expressed. But because it's not about Krishna, it's about themselves, they can't quite put their finger on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But the morning discussion was about primary and secondary. And then the difficulty seems to be that Srila Rupa Goswami, he gives a perfect definition.
Yes.
Includes primary and secondary.
Yes, because they go together. We only separate them just for analysis.
Yes.
But otherwise, application, they're always together.
But then in application...
It's just like, this is the bread, this is the butter.
Yes.
Right? The butter goes on the bread. Right? It's because we don't know. But if we know, someone gives you a piece of bread, it's like, where's the butter? Or someone hands you some butter, where's the bread? Unless you're six, then they'll eat the butter straight.
Krishna also takes butter.
That's where it comes from. But as a kid, you don't see him as an adult doing that. As a kid, you just eat. I noticed that we were on the train once, and we were doing something, and there was some butter left. And we're thinking, what do we do with this? And all the 6-year-olds said, we'll eat it. They just took it, and they just themselves just ate it straight. They were happy.
So the application of both simultaneously, primary and secondary. That's where the difficulty comes.
Yeah, it's like breathing and walking at the same time. You know, it's like you know, if you get the pace right, then you can, you know, do the breathing. Yeah, this overlap is where the difficulty comes, because in the spiritual, the two go together. On the material world, is that you have the one, and then there's the other. So you can separate the sentiment, seemingly. It's not actually, but it apparently is separated. And so then we focus on the secondary, because the secondary for us then becomes the primary, because everything's reversed.
Yeah.
So the more someone is more about the emotion and that, and less about the secondary, we'll consider that higher. You know, on one sense, on the sentimental platform, on the, you know, platform of reality, we'll consider them lower. You know, the nice guy who's always nice, he's nice. Everyone likes him, but he's a loser. You know, as far as making it in the world, he's the last one that'll make it. And the guy that nobody likes, he's the one that's, you know, got the, you know, the gold teeth, you know. Yeah. At least the stars in the gold teeth, you know, gold stars in the teeth. So, yeah. So that's the difficulty, is that we don't separate them, but we use them materially. So we have to separate them so we can see the difference between what's material and spiritual. But then when you apply it, you put it back together again. You know, it's like material. Then we're attached to it. So therefore, then you analyze it and break it apart. So then you can make a distinction between material and spiritual, or between material and devotional. Right? And then when we apply it, we put it back together and use it as one thing. Is that,
yeah.
You know, it's like the frying pan. You know, it's like this is the handle. You hold this part, right? And this part here, this flat, that's the bottom. That goes on the fire part. And the kind that's kind of, you know, more open at the top, that goes up. Because otherwise, if you put it upside down, you can't do much in it. Maybe you can cook a chapati, but, you know, you won't be able to do much more than that. You know, and if you put it the other way around, the handle melts and your hand gets burnt. So, you know, just, you have to analyze it. But when you use it, it's just all one, you know, smooth action. So
it sounds easy on the platform Raga Nuk Sadhana, but in Vaidhi we are like handicapped. It's like it doesn't work, because when we focus on the primary, then the secondary is messed up.
But there's no alternative. It's just the way it is. You know, it's like riding a bicycle, you know. You have to see where you're going, you have to hold on to the handlebars, you have to keep your feet on the pedals, you know, and not bump into, somehow or another, when you're on a bicycle the first time, the whole world's moving and it's always right in front of you. You know, so there isn't an alternative. That's why it's called Vaidhi Bhakti, because you're practicing. So that's why, and we get good at that practice, then that's good, it's expected. But if we become proud of that practice, then that's a problem, because no, it's just supposed to run like that. So because what are we becoming proud of? The secondary, not the primary. What's to become proud of in the primary? Because if you're absorbed in Krishna, you won't be proud. It's when you think of the secondary. Like we said, the gopis were thinking how fortunate they were, the situation they were in. So they weren't thinking of that particular active relationship with Krishna. So it moved into the secondary. So where's the taste for Krishna? Because he's thinking of them, but they're not thinking of him. They're thinking of themselves, and it's connected with him, but it's about themselves. So you see, as the emphasis goes on, so all the bad qualities come up when you focus on the activities not connected with Krishna, and the good qualities come up when you connect them. That's why a devotee, the pure devotee, has all the good qualities of the demigods. Because everything's about Krishna. So there's automatically they would be there. Because the negative are just a lack of the positive. That's why you call them negative. It means that they're not the positive quality. It's just a lack of it. It's not that it stands on its own. You know.
Maharaj, here when it is talking about devotion, which is filled with rajas and tamas,
Now, when we had categorization according to Bhagavad Gita, can we fit it in the process of the sixth chapter yoga? Because that is still the material? Or
it'll be material, yes. It's
so
material.
That fits in there, this devotion?
It fits in wherever it means. In the last six chapters, then it gives all the various things that you're doing, you know, faith and knowledge and all these things in the modes. So then it would just fit into to the, where the modes of nature is in those last chapters. So, yeah.
I'm doing bhakti because if Krishna, it makes Krishna happy and then I'm happy. So is that bad?
No, because it's connected to Krishna. Then with time it'll be, you'll find that doing bhakti because it pleases Krishna and then you're pleased, then has a taste. But you'll find as you progress in doing something because it pleases Krishna, then that's better. But it's just a matter. Point is, it's connecting it to Krishna, that's what you want to keep. What we're trying to do is analyze those things that aren't connected so that we avoid those. Right? So it, the process is simple. You just engage in Krishna's service. But the obstacles then we have, depending upon, you know, us as an individual, then so many that we create. So we're trying to analyze those, find those out to avoid them. Because we tend to just do them automatically without even thinking about it. Right? It means we think about the devotional service, that's why it seems so complicated. But the material things, we just do that spontaneously. So the difficulty is we're on the path of Vaidhi and Bhakti, but we're on the path of Rag when it comes to material.
You know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, because it's the prema maya and the kama maya. So we're nicely situated in kama maya, right? You know, it's like that. Yeah, fixed. Yeah, yes, like that. Maybe even advanced with symptoms of ecstasy. Like that. Yes.
When you speak about connecting with Krishna, do you mean that the mind has to be absorbed? Is that the connection point?
Means that your attitude is actually for Krishna. Like that. So mind is engaged, body is engaged, senses, the words, all these are different aspects that may be connected. But the point is that the purpose that you're doing it to please Krishna, then that's the actual connection. Because otherwise the materialist may also worship God, but it's not to please God, so it won't be actually considered bhakti. Okay. So. Banasura said, O Lord Mahadeva, I bow down to you, the spiritual master and controller of the worlds. You are like the heavenly tree that fulfills the desires of those whose desires are unfulfilled. Right, so see, they always bring it back to themselves. You know, it's about, you know, they're talking as if he's great and all that, but it's greatness in connection with what benefits I can get from that greatness. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that in the next two verses, 6 and 7, Banasura indirectly reveals his pride. Banasura continued, "These 1,000 arms you bestowed upon me have become merely a heavy burden. Besides you, I find no one in the three worlds worthy to fight." Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. Quote, "Since you can fulfill all desires, you should dissipate my sorrow." Right, that's what he opened with. "Except for you, there is no one equal to me for fighting. This implies if you mercifully fight with me, then I will be freed of my sorrow from my unsatisfied urge to fight. Defeating you, I will become famous as the conqueror of all directions." Right? So there's the benefit. He wants to fight. Only Shiva could fight with him. And so that would take care of that aspect. But in the fight, defeating Shiva now, because Shiva is the, you know, lord of everything, then he'll be greater than Shiva, then he'll be even better. So that's where we see his pride comes up. You know, so it wasn't, I have this, you're the only one, so would you please fight with me just because, you know, I want to fight, and, you know, like that. Srila Jiva Goswami explains. "Your benediction has only become a burden since I can find no one in the three worlds to fight except for you. You are my equal, but I should not fight with you. My arms are a burden since they have no use." Right? So I can only fight with Shiva, but I shouldn't, so therefore what's the point of the arms? Right? It means he could have just stuck to being his one-man orchestra, but, you know, he's got to, you know, fight. You know, it's just his nature.
Revealing that he says, "You are my equal."
Yes. Yes. But at the same time, he shouldn't because of his position. But that's the point. If he thinks because he's equal, then he has a shot at actually winning. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Although Vamanadeva is the doorkeeper of Bali Maharaj, his father, it seems he has no knowledge of the Supreme Lord. You know, he's saying that Shiva is the topmost.
No, but that's why it said before a bad association.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was previous. Yes. Banasura concluded, eager to fight with the elephants who rule the directions, O primeval Lord, I went forth pulverizing mountains with my arms, which were itching for battle, but even those great elephants fled in fear. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, wanting to fight the elephants of the directions with my arms, intensely itching with the desire to fight, O original person, Adya, I went out with the intention of becoming famous as the conqueror of all directions, by conquering all except the northeast direction where you reside. When I rushed to the mountains in order to relieve my arms of their itching, the directions became afraid. Therefore, please tell me, how can I relieve myself of this urge of battle except for fighting with you? And without relieving myself of this itching, how can I remain peaceful? Therefore, do not find fault with me. But it's still all about himself. He's saying, so he's approaching the authority, but it's not actually about devotion. He's showing that. It means he takes care. He, you know, does all the secondary forms of devotion. But it's actually all about himself, we see from here. How he deals is that it's always going to, you are the one who fulfills all desires of those who are unfulfilled, so that aspect. Then about his fighting, his need for fighting, and because, Kshatriya nature, plus he's got 1,000 arms as a Kshatriya. Then you put that together, he's itching to fight, so please don't find any fault, because what can I do, right?
When we deal with devotees, so do encourage, in a sense, this, not this specific approach, but people, they do have their desires, and we have Mishra Bhakti, but we do go to the Lord, and it's all about
us. It's about, the means that if you're going to go anywhere, better to go to the Lord than the demigods or think that I'll do this myself.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to do it yourself, then when it doesn't work, then you understand it won't work without the Lord. So then you surrender to the Lord.
So it just needs devotion.
But what's your alternative?
No devotion.
Yes, so is that, which is better, mixed devotion or no devotion?
Yes, but my point is, if he was going to Krishna, Banasura, would he get more benefit?
How do you mean by...
Because we say that even though we have mixed
bhakti, okay. Yes, but it means if he was showing that devotion and everything, then maybe yes. It's like Jaya Vijay, but it didn't mean that they weren't demons. Because otherwise, who's Krishna going to fight with? He's not going to fight with his friend.
So when we say bhakti mishra karma or karma mishra bhakti, we say it's all about the intent.
Yes, but it's connected to Krishna and Ma.
Yes.
Or even if it is connected to Krishna, but it's like if we say bhakti mishra karma, that we have that devotion to Krishna or devotion to whatever we're doing. But the problem is that at some point that goes, because it's just about karma.
Mm-hmm.
So karma mishra bhakti means it's about bhakti, but there is material desire there. And then in that we are trying to engage that desire in Krishna's service. But we should, the more we're aware of that, the better it goes. So.
Well, when it said that karma and jnana are both dependent upon bhakti,
yes,
that's referring to this sort of thing, that the secondary aspects of bhakti are used?
Yes, yes. And also the qualities, but you just don't have the consciousness. Because in the secondary we have the subtle, which is the qualities used, the metaphysical, and then you have the gross form. So they're using all those things in connection that would be connected with bhakti. So the form looks like bhakti, but because the actual ultimate intent is not bhakti, it fits into a lower level of consciousness. Right. So for him, it's karma, but he's sinful. So therefore, even his application of karma is weak. Like that. So, where he identifies as, a king who does everything properly, then he'll do those things properly. But you see here is that, you know, it's not actually the right mood in approaching Lord Shiva. Mm-hmm. Yes?
So someone who's doing sannyas, like the Sarvadharma Pratyajana.
Yes, okay, okay.
Then that you can say that that person is someone with no desires.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, they have the desire to just please Krishna. Yeah. So on the material platform, because they have no material desire, we'll say they have no desires.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as having no desires.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of whether they're going to be spiritual or material.
Yeah, so they have no material desire.
Right.
So there are times where you say that it's our choice. If we have desires, then I can say, I don't want
to have desires. But the point is the nature of the living entity is to have desires.
No, the material desires. I can say, I don't want them. I really, really, really.
Yeah, but then be consistent in that.
But I can't help it. They're just there. I can't do anything.
But you have to be consistent in not wanting them. That's the consistency.
But I actually do want them and I can't help it. So it's not a choice.
Yeah. What means? Why are we in that? We're in this situation where we have desires because we've cultivated those when they weren't so much of a desire.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is our free will. It's just this is the reaction. We can't say that when the reaction to our free will comes, it's no longer free will.
Mm.
You know?
We have the choice not to cultivate the further ones because now we're in a position to make the choice.
Yeah, but even before how we got them.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing to do about that.
Yes, there's nothing to do, but you got those by your free will. So what's here now, we can't say, oh, I'm being forced. You're being forced by your own free will.
But anyway, it could be that association, like a knowledge, da da da. So my.
Yes, but we choose that. But so there's that much choice. So you can't expect more choice than how much fits in 1/10,000th tip of the hair. Remember, everything else is in there also. So, you know, it gets its amount of volume of that 1/10,000th. That's why they say if you're doing something and it doesn't work out, it comes around and bites you. Right.
Can we say that Vanasura's activities are vikarma?
You could say on one level it means he's following activities of karma, you know, the Shastric mention. But in that way it is, but because his purposes and all that, it has kind of a vikarma mood to it, because karma is meant for elevating yourself, not degrading yourself. Right? So then if you're following these pious activities, elevating yourself, then that's what it's for. But even technically in elevating yourself in karma and gyan, following the rules is vikarma, when you consider that the actual purpose is to elevate yourself in devotional service to please Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So if you're looking at it in its absolute sense, anything other than bhakti is vikarma. And then within the vikarma, then you can say that, manamoy and vijnanamoy, or like that, those are karma, and then anamoy and pranamoy, those are vikarma. Means if that's just what you're doing. Means you're engaging the senses and economics in connection with dharma, or like that, then it's not. But where you just make up your own, you don't follow shastra, that would be vikarma. But here, even though you're following the shastra, but you're not using that to please the Lord, then technically this would be karma. So, yeah.
Just one more thing. So on that note, when you say we have, if we didn't surrender within that 1/11th of a second, then we do vayasadna bhakti. When you say that, you're meaning before, not now.
Before means?
When we had the chance, like when we were in the state where, you know, now we've cultivated the desires, so now they're stuck there. So you mean before, when we had the option of not cultivating it.
Means the bad.
To surrender in the gratitude.
maybe the question is how to catch the moment.
I've got confused on, because I was applying means, let's say in previous lifetime you cultivated hanging out with not nice people.
Mm-hmm.
Means you weren't from that group, but you kind of thought they were cool, so then you go and hang out, and you know they didn't like you, but eventually you hang around long enough that you became part of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so then this lifetime, then you're born in that scene. You know, and so then you can't say as, no, but I'm being forced. But yeah, you're being forced by the modes of nature only giving you the results of your previous example.
No,
that was what I gave, but now you've given something new. You have to explain that. You can't just say directly.
Okay, so sometimes you said this thing, if we haven't, you know, like if we didn't surrender like the sages or the gopis, then.
Oh, yes. So that means you take up sadhana bhakti.
Yeah,
that's what
right.
Krishna says in
yeah.
the Gita.
So when you say that, or when Krishna says that, he means before, when that was an option, because now we can't do it.
Of course
late.
You can do it. At any moment you can do it.
But the desires are now stuck because they've been cultivated.
No, but the soul can go beyond those. The point is that any moment the soul can choose not to be involved in it. But generally speaking, the soul, you know, being so conditioned, is comfortable in that environment of our conditioning.
Yeah.
And so therefore then that's why sadhana bhakti is generally what people use. But if we see someone who comes very naturally to that spontaneous platform and is stable in that, then that's their fortune.
Okay.
But if that doesn't happen, then you follow sadhana bhakti.
Okay. So there is a way it can happen, just like
it can happen at any moment because it's the nature of the soul. But the point is that it has to happen. It's not something we imagine, or it's because it's socially prestigious. Rag is higher than sadhana, so, you know, I want this prestigious position of rag, so therefore, you know. I mean, sahajiyas try that, but somehow or another, socially, they're not considered very elevated. You
yeah.
know? That's why up to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then the gentlemanly community of Bengal didn't consider Gaudiyas very, you know, nice, because all the sahajiyas in there, they're not intelligent, they're not, you know, they, you know, all everything they do. So it's only Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then he made it that, you know, yes, gentlemen are, you know, these guys aren't actually following. So he brought that in. Srila Jiva Goswami adds, he speaks of his grief and tried to use his arms so they would not be useless. You alone are unworthy of fighting with me. You alone are worthy of fighting with me, not others. You alone should fight with me. That is what Bana hints, thinking that others should serve him. The enemy of the Lord committed offense against even the Devatas. That is shown here. Right? Because none of the males, they should all serve me, because if Shiva, who is the head of all the demigods, controller of all the demigods in this, you know, context here, so therefore, then, and there's the only one equal to fighting with him would be Lord Shiva, then that places him in a position of superiority to the demigods and everybody else. Right? So only Shiva's his only equal, so that makes him, you know, so we can see his pride. There. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, hearing this, Lord Shiva became angry and replied, "Your flag will be broken, fool, when you have done battle with one who is my equal. That fight will vanquish your conceit." Because he thinks he's coming that I'm so strong no one else can fight with me, and you're the only one who can fight with me. You please, you know, fight, you know, let's have a you know, a bit of a wrestling match here. And so the thing is his pride is that I am equal to you, and so therefore that's why only you are equal to fight with me. And everybody else is my junior. So that pride is the... Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that is... Yeah. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, Shiva became angry on hearing those words. First he thought that he would kill Banasura. Then he thought, it would be improper to kill with my own hands my servant. If, having attained my mercy, this strong man proudly thinks that his 1,000 arms are a burden. then my master who relieves the world of its burdens will take away his burden, right? Because Krishna comes to remove the burden. Mm-hmm. So therefore, since it's a burden, then Krishna will take care of it. Considering this, Shiva spoke with anger. When your peacock flag breaks spontaneously, you will fight with someone equal to me. He states this to satisfy Banasura. The real meaning, however, is you will fight with a person who has splendor. Mm-hmm. Right. So then he'll look at it as good, because generally if your flag is broken, then that will be considered a bad thing. But for Bani, he'll consider it good, because now his opportunity is there to fight. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. But it also, when his flag is broken, means he's defeated. So it's also indicating that aspect. Well, Bana just thinks, I will fight with somebody like that and then I'll win. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Thus advised, unintelligent Banasura was delighted. Right? The fool then went home. O king, to wait for that which Lord Girisha had predicted, the destruction of his prowess. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. After hearing Lord Shiva's statement, Banasura, who was very much puffed up with his power, became elated that he would meet someone able to smash him to pieces. Banasura then returned home with great pleasure, and he always waited for the day when the suitable fighter would come to cut down his strength. He was such a foolish demon. It appeared that foolish, demoniac human beings, when unnecessarily overpowered with material opulences, want to exhibit these opulences, and such foolish people feel satisfaction when these opulences are exhausted. The idea is that they do not know how to expend their energy for right causes, being unaware of the benefit of Krishna consciousness. Right? So, Krishna consciousness means you spend it because it's to be spent. You don't spend it if it's not to be spent. But for the foolish demons, they have so much wealth, they spend it for things that no need to spend it on and just waste it. You know? And then having it all gone, then it's, you know, what to do? Actually, there are two classes of men. One is Krishna conscious, the other is non-Krishna conscious. The non-Krishna conscious men are generally devoted to the demigods, whereas the Krishna conscious men are devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna conscious persons utilize everything for the service of the Lord. The non-Krishna conscious persons utilize everything for sense gratification, and Banasura is a perfect example of such a person. For his own satisfaction, he is very eager to utilize his extraordinary power to fight. Not finding any combatant, he struck his powerful arms against mountains, breaking them to pieces. In contrast to this, Arjuna also possessed extraordinary powers of fighting, but he utilized them only for Krishna. So he was just doing service, and only if there was a need, then he would use them to fight. We see Banasura, he has to fight, so even though there's no one to fight, he goes out and just, you know, harasses the mountains. Like that. So that's the point. The non-Krishna conscious person doesn't actually know how to use the facilities that Krishna gives them. Yeah. Verses 10 to 24. Chitraleka unites Usha with Aniruddha. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. In a dream, Bana's daughter, the maiden Usha, had an amorous encounter with the son of Prajumna, though she had never before seen or heard of her lover. The BBT purport mentions. The incidents now described will lead up to the fight predicted by Lord Shiva. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following from the Vishnu Purana, which explains Usha's dream. O Brahmana, when Usha, the daughter of Bana, happened to see Parvati playing with her husband, Lord Shambhu, Usha intensely desired to experience the same feelings. At that time, Goddess Gauri, Parvati, who knows everyone's heart, told the sensitive young girl, "Don't be so disturbed. You will have a chance to enjoy with your own husband." Hearing this, Usha thought to herself, "But when? And who will be my husband be?" In response, Parvati addressed her once more. "The man who approaches you in your dream on the 12th lunar day of the bright fortnight of the month Vaishakh will become your husband, O princess." Okay. Srila Vishnu, so an interesting to note is that she described it by, how you say, explaining time according to the moon, right? To the lunar conception. Because Aniruddha, he's the lord of the moon. You know, so then, because otherwise you know, if he was connected with the sun, then he used that, or, you know, like this. So he uses, but he uses the moon one, because it's Aniruddha. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, losing sight of him in her dream, Usha suddenly sat up in the midst of her girlfriends, crying out, "Where are you, my lover?" She was greatly disturbed and embarrassed. Right? She's disturbed is there and embarrassed because everybody else is there staring at her. What are you talking about? Right? Srila Jiva Goswami comments, she was in great pain because of separation, viva laha, or overcome with fatigue after enjoyment with him. Then she became embarrassed. Harivamsa describes the condition. Enjoying with him in a dream, she became overcome with womanly emotions. With red complexion, she wept and suddenly rose out of bed in the night. It is understood that Aniruddha directly came to her. This was arranged by Chitraleka, as will be explained later. This and his actions occurred from a display of human-like pastimes. So then he comes, Chitraleka brings and all that. So Chitraleka is the one with the mystic powers. Right? He's just sitting there in his bed. Next he shows up, he's somewhere else. Right? You know, so. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Banasura had a minister named Kumbanda, whose daughter was Chitraleka, a companion of Usha's. She was filled with curiosity, and thus she inquired from her friend. Right, so Chitraleka was one of them who were there. Chitraleka said, "Who are you searching for, O fine-browed one?" Right, so in other words, she didn't have a monobrow, right? You know, but yeah. "What is this hankering you are feeling? Until now, O princess, I haven't seen any man take your hand in marriage." Usha said, "In my dream, I saw a certain man who had a dark blue complexion, lotus eyes, yellow garments, and mighty arms. He was the kind who touches women's hearts. It is that lover I search for. After making me drink the honey of his lips, he has gone elsewhere, and thus he has thrown me, hankering fervently for him, into the ocean of distress." Chitraleka said, "I will remove your distress. If he is to be found anywhere in the three worlds," right? Because if you can find him in the three worlds, she can find him, because she's a mystic yogi. Like, if he's outside the universe, then yeah, sorry. But if he's inside the universe, he can be found. But you know, always good to have friends like that, right? Not ones who say all kinds of stuff. And, yeah, okay. "I will bring this future husband of yours who has stolen your heart. Please show me who he is." Saying this, Chitraleka proceeded to draw accurate pictures of various demigods, Gandharvas, Siddhas, Charanas, Panagas, Daityas, Vidyadharas, Yakshas, and humans. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "O king among the humans, Chitraleka drew pictures of the Vrishnis, including Surasena, Anakandundabi, Balaram, and Krishna. When Usha saw the picture of Prajumna, she became bashful. And when she saw Aniruddha's picture, she bent her head down in embarrassment. Smiling, she exclaimed, 'He's the one, it's him.'" Right? So she could tell the flavor, even though Krishna and Prajumna and Aniruddha probably basically all look the same, there's a difference in flavor. You know, there's some subtle differences. So when Prajumna came, all the ladies of the palace thought that it was Krishna, so they all dispersed. But then they saw how he moved. He, you know, physically looked like Krishna, but how he dealt was different. And so then that, you know, does that make sense? So the dealing, that means the mood's different. So then again, so she could see something of Prajumna because of that attractiveness of the Cupid aspect. But then the inner portion of that, Aniruddha, you know, the aspect of the mind, then that's the part that she saw that, and then.
Well, interesting, the word chitra means picture and leka means to draw.
To draw, okay, yeah. The one who can draw, yeah. She seems to be quite good at it, but you could tell the difference. So in other words, it wasn't stick painted. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Chitralekha said, among all these men, who is your husband? Seeing Prajumna, Usha became embarrassed, understanding that he was her father-in-law. Seeing his son, Aniruddha, she repeated twice out of astonishment and joy, this is he, this is he. It is understood that Usha then wrote the words Aniruddha, the son of Prajumna, above the picture. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Chitralekha, endowed with mystic powers, recognized him as Krishna's grandson, Aniruddha. My dear king, she then traveled by the mystic skyway to Dwarka, the city under Lord Krishna's protection. Right? So mystic skyway is that there's different levels within the skyway, you know, of where you can travel. And so then she can travel within the mystic one. Right? Different demigods, different positions, they have their own. Like Shiva has his. All these have his. So you can only travel in the one you're supposed to be in. So she could travel in the mystic skyways. Right. Mm-hmm. Yes?
How does it affect the girl's chastity if she falls in love with someone like this, but it's somebody who she cannot actually marry? Like in very practical cases, they would fall in love with someone by hearing about them, then they could actually marry them, but they never could or also. But nowadays, you don't see somebody in the movie or someone that you fall in love with somebody they cannot marry.
Then you're happy with your own husband and forget about Shah Rukh. You know, if he's not available, then you take what's next best. And once you've finished all the cinema stars, then you start down from there. You know.
The humans.
Huh?
The humans.
Yes, then you go down to the humans, yes. So first you start with the devas, and then you come down to the humans. So what to do? But the point is because everybody's attracted by them, then, you know, it's not a problem, because that's there. But the point is then which human you connect yourself to, then you stick there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, and then she traveled by the mystic skyway to Dwarka, the city under Lord Krishna's protection. Right? So the point is it's Krishna's place, it's under his protection. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, she had special powers by her nature. Or, according to Hari Vamsa, she attained her powers from Narada. Since she was afraid of the Lord, Narada consoled her and said, take this tamasic knowledge which bewilders the whole world, O descendant of Diti, I give you this accomplished knowledge. She was actually protected by the Lord. All this happened by the will of the Lord, O King. Shining with intelligence, you should understand such powers. Right? So it's by, that's why it mentioned protected by Krishna. It's only by his protection that this was able to go on. Otherwise, you can't go into Dwarka, you know, just like that. You can't just go in just because you're powerful in this. You know, we have that, you know, that story of Ghatotkacha. You know, the same thing. Somehow they're always going to Dwarka to pick up people. The mystics are always going there, right? But when he arrived there, then he couldn't, you know, he wouldn't address the person who said that he's the protector. And he didn't connect that the only protector of Dwarka is Krishna, so he just thought he's some beggar. So he went in and then, you know, he can't find what he's looking for. So then he comes back out. But it's done in such a way as who showed up is a mystic. And so when you go inside, then if you want to show them that, you know, you have to listen to them, you have to show more mystic power than them. So he went in to find the person, and there's 10,000 of those persons. So which one's the written, you know, so then you come out, okay, who are you? And then work it out. So that she could go and pick up Aniruddha means it's by Krishna's, you know, will. So this is how he just wanted this pastime to unfold. Right? So he's doing human pastimes. Aniruddha is performing, but Chitralekha, she's a mystic. She doesn't have to do human stuff. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So Krishna and Radha, they all do human pastime. It doesn't mean Purnamasi has to. You know, she arranges things as necessary. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's why these mystic things, they're actually at a lower level. They're for serving the higher level. The higher level is Krishna's human-like pastimes. and all these other mystical and opulence and power, all these other things, those are only in support of. So as they will add flavor, they're added in. And as they want, then they're not. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. There she found Prajumna's son, Aniruddha, sleeping upon a fine bed. With her yogic power, she took him away to Shonitapura, where she presented her girlfriend, Usha, with her beloved. The BBT purport mentions. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments as follows on this verse. It is stated here that Chitralekha resorted to mystic power, yogam astita. As explained in the Harivamsa and other literatures, she needed to employ her powers because when she arrived at Dwarka, she found herself unable to enter Lord Krishna's city. At that time, Sri Narad Muni instructed her in the mystic art of entering. Some authorities also say that Chitralekha is herself an expansion of Yoga Maya. Because that way, then she's arranging all this. But, you know, she'll be this particular personality. But it's not that she's not, because otherwise, who else can arrange these things? Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. When Usha beheld him, the most beautiful of men, her face lit up with joy. She took the son of Prajumna to her private quarters, which men were forbidden even to see, right, let alone go in, and there enjoyed with him. Usha worshipped Aniruddha with faithful service, offering him priceless garments, along with garlands, fragrances, incense, lamps, sitting places, and so on. Right, as a princess, then all this would be available. And so the best. And so she would arrange all the best things just for Aniruddha. So most likely within the palace, those who are, you know, managing in the palace, all these nice things, those are just nice things that, you know, a girl of her status would, you know, want and use. They don't realize that she's not using herself directly. She's offering him to Aniruddha. She also offered him beverages, all types of food, and sweet words. As he thus remained hidden in the young lady's quarters, Aniruddha did not notice the passing of days, for his senses were captivated by Usha, whose affection for him ever increased. Right? So we can also understand is that she'll also have that aspect of being some connection with Aniruddha's internal potency. Otherwise, how would he be captivated? Because the Lord can't be captivated by the Kama Maya, right? So therefore, it's the Prema Maya that's catching his attention. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, the palace in which Usha and Chitralekha lived was so well fortified that it was impossible for any male to enter, either enter or see inside, because you have these things, there's only certain ways you can get in. And then there's so many guards and all that, and that's the inner place, but then the inner of the inner place is where her, then you can't go, because you might have men servants in the outer inner, but you're not going to have any men in the inner inner. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
No. Okay, how do you call it? The explanation of the explanation. Yeah. So taking. Yes. Usha and Aniruddha lived together in the place, in the palace, and day by day, Usha's love for Aniruddha grew four times upon four. So not one on one, four on four, right? So that's like that. That definitely beats, the Italians, right? Usha pleased Aniruddha with valuable garments, flowers, garlands, scents, and incense. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yes, because if you don't finish before the last one, then we run the risk of turning into pumpkins.